Wendy Harmer, 702 Mornings.
Well, it has been a tumultuous year for our Premier Mike Baird. It's fair to say his year has been a bit like one of those popular mud runs the extreme sports people love. You know, where you tackle the obstacle course, you've got the cargo nets in, the zip line and the rope pull in, the army crawl in, the mud pit. And no matter how well you do, you always end up a bit dirtier than when you started. It's a pretty good metaphor for politics these days, isn't it? No one gets out squeaky clean. Well, except for perhaps the New Zealand Prime Minister John Key. So let's look at Mike Baird's Tough Mudder course in 2016, which in no particular order included Westconnex, council amalgamations, lockout laws, greyhound racing, the felling of Anzac trees for light rail and the spending blowout, ICAC, new bicycle laws, TAFE cuts, shark nets, new protest laws, the land clearing and biodiversity debate, loss of Parramatta heritage, the relocation of the Powerhouse Museum, the selling off of Transgrid, and add to that the obstacle course of a raft of privatisations in our prisons, hospitals and other public services. And then there's the challenge he has on his hands with the planned part privatisation of the land titles registry. And I guess that's the hang and tough part of the course where on the mud run, the Premier has to steer down the Law Council of Australia representing some 65,000 lawyers who are telling him wrong way, go back. I'm exhausted. I wonder how the Premier's feeling. Good morning, Premier, and welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Wendy. You did miss a few things off there, like the record economic growth and the most jobs in the country and great infrastructure underway. You did miss a few things off there.
Okay. All right. Well, good-o. Well, let's talk about the good and the bad. That is a lot to tackle in under 2 years, Premier. Are you going too fast for voters to keep up?
Well, there's no doubt that it's an ambitious agenda, Wendy, and I think, you know, one of the challenges you have coming into government is, you know, you can take the opportunity just to sit there or you can look at everything that needs to be done and you get on with it. And certainly things such as infrastructure, where we've been so far behind, you know, the rest of the country and the massive backlog we've had has led to huge congestion, the lack of investment in public transport, the clogging of our roads, the rundown in hospitals and schools. We had to get on with it. So, you know, it has been ambitious. We have done a lot, but I think ultimately, when you reflect on this year, I actually think it's been a very good year for New South Wales.
Okay. Voters have been telling us that they feel a bit left out of the process, though. I mean, at the moment, let's face it, you have the Greater Sydney Commission, you have urban growth, and you have a whole lot of administrators in various councils, and these are all people who are unelected. Do you understand why people think that perhaps it's all feeling a bit undemocratic at the moment?
Well, no, I mean, that's not the case. I mean, the thing about the Greater Sydney Commission, I mean, there's effectively a nominated commissioner that represents local councils and obviously reflects local views and understanding. So, I mean, that's a key part of the Greater Sydney Commission process. I mean, the councils, yes, there are some that are being merged, but, I mean, they are only being they're only in administration, so we can bring the councils together, prepare it for the elected council, which will be coming next year, and there's great work that's being done among those. So that doesn't in any way reflect that we are listening to the community. We continue to listen, and I think that's what good governments do.
Okay. Well, we've got a big agenda there, but before I get to a few other questions, let's go to the point of listening and meeting people. Last night, in Newtown, the Westconnex campaigners met and they were expecting a representative from Westconnex to turn up and that they cancelled at the last minute. They say that you won't meet with them. Will you make an undertaking, will you give an undertaking on the program today to go and meet with the people who are worried about Westconnex and its impact?
I just did last week, Wendy. So, I mean, two key organisers of Westconnex protest groups, they came into my office and I met with them personally, and we went through some of the issues, and I've met individuals whose home.
What about getting out to one of these community meetings? Is that possible?
Well, I do it regularly, Wendy, and ultimately I understand some of the concerns, and you've seen this year we've significantly enhanced the process in terms of acquisitions. We're certainly doing all we can across that entire project. to ensure that we're improving community amenity as much as possible. We are listening and responding. Indeed, some changes to the project have reflected various community concerns. But, you know, we have to remember that there's hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis that are going to benefit when this project is delivered. And if you can sort of cut the peak travel time on the M5 by average 15 minutes, if you can come from out near Parramatta and get to the airport in up to 40 minutes quicker, there is a massive improvement in the quality of life that people currently enjoy. And that has been complemented, and this is what the WestConnex people say, we'll invest in public transport. We're spending even more, the most in public transport that has ever been spent in the state, but $20 billion into the metro, plus the addition of the central to Parramatta metro, which is the next stage of it. So we are absolutely changing the shape of our city. We understand it's not easy when you undertake that sort of infrastructure and you throw in light rail as well, which you've spoken about. I mean, there's a huge amount going on in the city, but I think, Wendy, when we look back in 10 years' time, we're going to be very thankful that it was done, and we're going to be appreciative of those that have had to have a difficult position of being relocated out of their homes to make way for this. That's not easy, but I think the overall city is going to have a huge benefit when they're delivered.
Okay. Let's talk about this underlying issue of population. You say the city is being redesigned or reimagined. The new suburbs are popping up everywhere. We've got high-rise, even a new aerotropolis around Badgerys Creek. That three-city string of pearls is imagined by the Greater Sydney Commission, headed by Lucy Turnbull. Mm-hmm. She's in that. She says that Sydney, which is now home to about 5 million people, will be a metropolis of 6 million by 2036 and 8 million by 2056. Now, most people, or many people who listen to this program, want to know how you did your sums here. Why does Sydney have to get so big and so fast? And yesterday, Dick Smith was on this program backing Pauline Hanson and questioning Lucy Turnbull's projections. And here's what he had to say.
She's the only political party that has a policy on population, and that is not endless growth. The huge immigration means we won't have jobs for people, no one can afford a house, and it's complete madness because it's endless. I mean, Lucy Turnbull talks about 4 million, 8 million for Sydney. She doesn't then talk about 16 million, 32 million, but that's what she's implying. It's absolute endless growth, and most Australians don't want that because we're sensible and you know you have to live in balance.
Are you worried about the possible rise of One Nation in Western Sydney? And do you think that, as I say, growing the city too fast is going to be a worry for you?
Well, there's a mix in that, Wendy. I mean, there's no doubt that economic growth is linked with population growth. And you can go through all types of studies to show that is very clear. And if you have economic growth, there's more opportunities. One of Dick's concerns there, jobs. There's more opportunities for more jobs. There's obviously more opportunities for additional revenue to provide more infrastructure, better services for the community. So there is undoubtedly a link between population growth and economic growth. Now, obviously, if you look at our population over the past sort of decade or so, it's, you know, around about 1 to 1.5%. Has been where the population goes. So that is something that's not a huge influx, but over time that obviously adds up. So if you manage it properly and you provide the infrastructure, and that's one of the challenges we have. You know, we have this great sense of living with increased population without the infrastructure coming ahead of the growth. And that, I think, is one of the most exciting things about our plans is we are, for the first time in almost a generation, actually getting ahead of the growth and providing capacity for that growth, which helps economically.
But many people are questioning the idea of the growth at its most basic level. I mean, do you think that a lot of people are saying Sydney's full already?
Well, I don't agree with that. And, I mean, I think that's potentially very damaging because if that's something that you run, that sends a signal that businesses, well, you can't expect sort of a growth in this city because we're saying that's as far as it gets. I also think it sends a wrong signal internationally, and it certainly is not in the long term economic interest. Mm. You have to manage the growth, sustainable growth, and that is something I absolutely agree with. And, you know, that's why I think appropriate plans that ensure appropriate growth with the right infrastructure to support is something that is the right strategy.
So just to get back to the idea of a Pauline Nation perhaps fielding more candidates in Western Sydney, does that worry you?
Oh, well, look, Wendy, I mean, I think in any political parties, they've got a right to run in any election. And certainly, Pauline Hanson, One Nation, expectation will be that she will run candidates in the state election in 2019 and the federal election at the same time. And that is her right and all those candidates' right. I mean, I think ultimately what our job to do is to listen to local communities, to respond to concerns, to build infrastructure they need to deliver the services and to make a difference to people's daily lives. I mean, there's resistance that we're receiving in terms of trying to improve the quality of life in Western Sydney in terms of the motorways and, you know, what difference that'll make. The transport that we're building, there's resistance at certain levels to some of those. And, you know, what we're trying to do is understand local communities that they need the best possible hospitals and schools and rail and roads, and we're going to deliver them and support them. And I think we'll stand on sort of our track record, and sort of other parties can stand on whatever sort of platforms they want.
Let's go to this uproar about the sell-off of the Lands Title Register. You are being hammered by everyone who knows anything about this. You have, as I mentioned earlier, 65,000 lawyers telling you it's a bad decision to sell off the Land Titles Registry. In fact, the UK, they did a U-turn and knocked it off, and the opposition is strident here. Now, Gary Ullman, the president of the Law Society of New South Wales, was on this program on Monday, and this is what he had to say.
Well, the New South Wales government has responded by putting safeguards into the documentation that is to be put in place with a new concession operator. But the view we have is that any private operator is going to want to commercialise and monetise its investment. And we're very concerned that that could be at the risk of information, which is at the moment highly confidential, being released to the wider public. That's something that we're very concerned about. And indeed, it's one of the reasons why the UK government decided to do what it's doing and do a U-turn on the sale of their registry and keep it in government hands.
Are you listening on this one, Mike Baird? I mean, really, the level of alarm on this, I haven't seen anything like it, I have to tell you.
Well, I mean, I think there was a lot of alarm around the poles and wires, and you need to get to the substance of the matter. And, you know, as the Treasurer has said on your program, we have put safeguards in around the concerns. So
why would you sell off a monopoly that's making a profit for New South Wales? It's not like you're giving consumers more choice here. I mean, I just don't understand the point of it.
There is information that's available, and you can look through digital, so innovation that can be used to provide additional services to the public.
Well, but I know that this is what the Treasurer said. It's because of the requirements for IT and also the private business offers economy of scale. I've put that to various people and they say those two reasons do not stack up.
Yeah. Well, look, Wendy, there's no doubt it's been done around the world. It's been done in Canada. There's sort of no concerns there. I mean, provided you've got the regulatory function, which we do, we retain the data and the information, which we do, there is effectively an administrative function that can be done and provide benefits through economies of scale, in addition for potentially other services that can be provided to the consumer. Now, the protections in terms of prices, well, you've heard the Treasurer say. I mean, there can't be CPI is where the price is locked in on.
What? Everyone is telling me that from now on, if this happens, if this sale goes through, that we will be heading down a lease, 35-year lease,
yep.
That if this goes through, we'll be looking down the barrel of a US-style system where everyone who buys a house is going to have to take out land title insurance, and that is going to cost about $1,000 on a million-dollar house. So everyone is going to be up for at least a grand. Are you telling me that this selling off this system won't lead to everyone having to take out land title insurance? Can you guarantee that?
That's right. I mean, the Torrens Assurance Fund remains in place. So, I mean, that's not going anywhere, that remains in place, which does exactly that purpose you're talking about. So, I mean, that's one of the things people put around against it, but the facts are that Torrens Assurance Fund remains in place.
But the outfit is making money. It's a world-class service. Why would you sell it?
Well, again, Wendy, I mean, you can have an ideological view on this. If there's
Maybe I could say that you have an ideological view on it.
But then again, I mean, if you have a capacity with this service, as in we retain the key, so people are concerned, we understand we retain that, the administration, the IT platforms that run, if someone can do that more efficiently with economies of scale, and at the same time, we maintain all the integrity in the system, the torrent, the assurance of title, all of the things that we have, we retain. And at the same time, we've got the capacity to invest that in new infrastructure. So in this case, it is to provide significant upgrades to our sporting facilities.
I just don't understand the equivalency there about upgrading our sports facilities. I mean, I don't understand why they're put in the same basket. Why we can't,
You love your sport, Wendy. So
yes, I do. But why doesn't the NRL, for instance, pay for the sports facilities?
Well, the ANZ Stadium. There is multiple sports
get various sporting bodies then.
Well, there is massive economic benefit that comes from attracting the best possible events, and that's one of the things. You take that capital, you invest it, you actually grow the economy more in the sense of additional economic activity that is generated. And look, you would have seen, I don't know whether you did see, but Brookfield Multiplex, Brookfield Asset Management, the global CEO was out here, and he looked at what we are doing, and it's on a limited number of assets, but the asset recycling, he said, is a model for the world in terms of renewing and upgrading infrastructure, providing economic growth and investment sort of opportunities.
Okay. Now,
that is ultimately what all we're trying to do, Wendy, is to improve, whether it be new arts facilities, much more investment in public transport, in our schools, in our roads.
Yes, but I know what the deal is. I know how it works. But
we're trying to make a great city even greater.
But if I had at least 65,000 lawyers and professionals telling me that I was doing the wrong thing, I might listen.
Well, I think the concerns that they've raised, we feel, have been addressed,
okay.
Wendy.
All right. Let's just move on to the CBD light rail project. Well, that is a beauty. That's much needed. It's a 12-kilometre route, 19 stops from Circular Quay along George Street to Central through Surrey Hills, Moore Park, Kensington, Kingsford, Randwick, then back again. However, let's talk about that sort of wound inflicted on Sydney, I guess, when you allowed those historic fig trees to be cut down. Do you regret that?
Well, can we wind that back a bit, Wendy? Mm. I mean, I didn't allow anything to happen. Yes, unfortunately, we did lose some fig trees as part of it.
Who lost them? You lost them, didn't you?
Well, Wendy,
you're the Premier.
Yeah, but Wendy, do you know that the Transport Minister, together with myself at times, sat down and looked at each and every individual tree and did everything we possibly could together with Transport to try and save as many as we could.
Well, there are people, of course, and the opposition says, Premier, that there were alternative routes that meant that you could have saved those trees.
I can tell you that they were exhausted. Mm-hmm. And it's not, look, Wendy, I don't sit here and I've seen the monikers and I know what people say about me. The last thing I want to do is just to needlessly take down trees, particularly those beautiful trees. I mean, they're beautiful. And that's,
well, why
and that's,
didn't, for goodness sake, well, why didn't you? People because, are still grieving over those trees.
Well, because, Wendy, the light rail is, as you just said, an essential project. Mm. Now, in terms of delivery of it, we did everything we possibly could to minimise the impact on the trees. And indeed, there were hundreds that were saved in terms of all along the route. And there will be even more trees that will be there along the route when it is completed. And we've tried to replant as many as we could. We did what we could. But ultimately, that's not an easy decision. And it's, when you are building infrastructure on an infill basis, there are things you have to do that aren't easy. But in terms of the long-term benefit of the city, that is what has to be the driver in it. Now, I absolutely wish that we didn't have to lose one of those. And I can assure you that the Transport Minister did everything he possibly could to minimise the loss of those trees, which he did.
I want to move on to the cost of that project. Gladys Berejiklian, when she said that the... when the Transport Minister, Transport New South Wales notified the then Transport Minister, Gladys Berejiklian, that the light rail project had blown out by $500 million due to incorrect pricing and poor planning, were you also told?
Well, I mean, you've seen that report come out. You've sort of acknowledged, the Transport Minister acknowledged that she was operating on the information that she had at the time.
Well, why don't we then get you to release the documentation so the people of New South Wales can see for themselves who was told what and when? That would be in the interest of transparency, wouldn't it?
Wendy, what you're aware of is that there has been an increase in cost, but the Auditor General has acknowledged as part of that there were... Yeah, we were rebuilding New South Wales, and yes, it hasn't been perfect as we've gone across individual projects, but we have enhanced and improved the governance arrangements, which the Auditor General in her report acknowledged, and she also acknowledged that it's still a strong project. And that's ultimately what we're very proud of. It's going to be a fantastic project for this city. Yes, it has cost more than anticipated. We've revealed those costs, and we did early on, but what we are focused on is delivering it, because even in that report it was acknowledged this is going to be a very good project for the city.
Okay. Just finally, we've only got a minute left. There are rumours that you're maybe looking at John Key and seeing how well he did to jump out when he did. Any thoughts about bailing?
Oh, look, I think, I've spoken many times on this. My intent is to remain in the job, but I do acknowledge... John Key was an outstanding leader. I had the privilege to get to know him, and he was a benchmark, I think, for any political leader. Okay. And indeed, his potential success, I see there's a few people challenging, but I've also got to know Bill English, and he likewise is very impressive. So strong neighbour.
But not for you. Well, I hope finally, Premier, that you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I'm sure your family is looking forward to having you home for a bit. So that's all the best from everyone here at ABC Sydney.
Well, thank you, Wendy.
Wendy Harmer, weekdays from 8:30 on 702 ABC Sydney.